Yle Podcast.
Laszlo Andor, you come from Hungary. Our cousins are in Hungary, so that is a good reason to talk to you about politics in Europe. But also you spent 5 years in Brussels working as a commissioner for employment and social affairs. Now, as EU turned 60 years, the Rome 60 Declaration is suggesting and supporting multi-speed Europe. What do you think about this?
Well, thank you for inviting to the program. Indeed, the 60th anniversary of the Treaty of Rome is a time to reflect on how to continue with the European integration. And for countries that recently joined, like Hungary, for example, indeed, this is a crucial question. Hungary didn't join to be in the second class of the European train. In any Eastern member state, I think it causes some concern and controversy when someone mentions two-speed or multi-speed Europe. If you look at the language which is used in the so-called white paper of the Commission and also in the Rome Declaration, in reality, these documents do not speak about exclusion. They do not speak about second class. They do not speak about even true speed. They speak about the possibility of deepening the integration by a majority group, which may not necessarily include everybody. That simply means flexibility. And I think the EU already developed this practice of flexibility when, for example, the United Kingdom or Denmark were given a so-called opt-out from the monetary union. They didn't have to introduce the single currency, for example. And Sweden is not part of the banking union, for example. So countries do not necessarily have to participate in everything, while there can be groups of countries which may see the national interest best pursued if they form some deeper alliance or integration. And I think that should not be prevented. It should be allowed as soon as everyone else is also allowed to join.
Well, what could Gani bring? EU is in many ways in trouble. It's been slammed from left to right. Everything is EU's fault, the migration, the economic situation, the lack of security, and so forth. What good can even a further multi-speed Europe bring to its citizens?
Well, what I think is that the key question is the deepening of the EMU. Yes,
the monetary union.
Yes, indeed, the European Union is often criticized for many things. But if there is clearly an area of malfunctioning, that's the problem of the euro, which we saw in this very long eurozone crisis, which is not entirely over. So to continue to repair the monetary union, I think it is very important. And maybe countries outside, like Poland or Hungary or Romania, would not need to participate in everything that happens inside the eurozone. But the process should not be obstructed. I think this is very important. There can be other issues. For example, since the Bratislava summit, which took place among the 27 countries after the Brexit referendum in the UK, they elevated the idea of defence cooperation. Maybe not every country would want to participate. I can assume that, for example, the Irish would not want to participate, or another country. If the Irish or another country doesn't want to participate in a deeper defence cooperation, they should be allowed to stay out of that. If that's the best solution.
The Europe is led by right-wingers or centre-right governments at the moment. They're very strong. What's wrong with social democracy? You're a socialist. We saw in the Netherlands last elections, they just came crumbling down. the Social Democrats. What is wrong, and what would be the next raison d'être, a reason to exist or to be for any Social Democratic Party in Europe?
Yes, you can choose different type of horizons to discuss the crisis of social democracy. But before choosing either a short term or a long term, let's just mention that junior parties in coalition governments do not do very well. Whether you are a liberal or social democrat or sometimes center-right, if you're a junior partner in a coalition, you may not win, or you may just lose much more than the major party, the dominant party, is losing. And that's what happened in the case of the Dutch Social Democrats. But
the Social Democrats have been doing badly for the past years. That's just a fact. We only have 9 members in the European Council represented by Social Democrats or Socialists.
I would say there have been ups and downs of social democracy. So in 2009, 10, 11, the tendency was that social democrats indeed lost a lot of elections. You can just name the UK or Hungary or Spain, for example, ending the period of Zapatero. But then there was a period when there were a lot of social democratic victories. You can remember France, Romania, Lithuania, Malta, Slovakia, Denmark already in 11. So, and then Sweden. After 8 years, the social democrats came back to govern, and they also came back in Portugal. So there was a period when social democrats were indeed winning, which means that people gave some confidence to the progressive governments to lead Europe out of the economic crisis. I think this requires a deep reflection why this did not work out. Indeed, we have to go back to the Netherlands, where the finance minister was not only a Dutch politician, but also a chairman of the Eurogroup. And the question indeed is why social democrats in terms of macroeconomic policy were not more forceful to find alternatives to the austerity-oriented policies that largely originate from Berlin.
But you yourself, as a socialist, you have elections coming up next spring in Hungary.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do? I mean, how do you sell your politics to the voters? The factories are gone, the mines are gone. Those employers that actually move masses, and that's how social democracy grew and through and with the help of unions. What's the next thing that you sell?
Well, Central European countries actually managed to retain quite a significant share of manufacturing as compared to some West European countries where services, including financial services, became dominant sectors for employment. So decent working conditions and decent wages do matter a lot in Central Europe. And in the last 6 months, we also saw in Hungary that after years of wage stagnation, the government was practically forced to agree with a significant wage increase, including a significant rise in the minimum wage, because they saw that a lot of people have another option. They can leave the country, and the shortage of workforce is actually a threat to business development. So this may help changing policies also in Hungary. But this is not only the only issue on which social democrats should focus on. Let's be honest, there are many, many problems with corruption and transparency in general. I think in Hungary and Poland, the weakness, the weakening of the rule of law and the quality of the democracy is also an issue where we have to propose much better alternatives than what we have now.
What's going on with the with Eastern European partners of ours? I mean, with the so-called Visegrad countries, Poland, mm-hmm. Czech, Slovakia, and Hungary. Most of these countries are led by populist leaders, although the ruling party itself is not a so-called populist.
Well, the Visegrad Group indeed is a very important one. I think this is historically a very important initiative to help the European integration of originally three and four countries. They're more diverse than it seems sometimes, because currently Poland and Hungary are governed by right-wing governments, but the Czech Republic and Slovakia are governed by center-left governments, and very often this also shows on their behavior. Yes, it's true that on the issue of immigration and the refugee crisis, they demonstrated a kind of united front. And they did not play, probably none of them, a constructive role to address this European crisis. However, on social policies, for example, the Czech Republic is very constructive, and also on issues where there is a controversy, like migration, Mr. Sobotka, the Prime Minister of the Czech Republic, is trying to help better communication between the Visegrad Group and the Western countries.
There's been a lot of worried voices from the East that this turbulence that we see in Europe at the moment will somehow undermine their influence, and that they sort of, like, as I read and see it, is that there are fears that our Eastern member states are afraid that they are sort of losing the ability to be a part of ruling, making decisions.
Well, I think, when our countries joined the EU and on the way to joining the EU, what was always emphasized or even overemphasized is the material benefits of European integration. And people still tend to see it this way, that we are entitled to financial assistance from the EU, which should not endeavor in going further than that, social policies or political values in general. But social policies, social objectives and political values are written in the treaty. This is not something that would be just added on the reality of the EU. This is part and parcel of the European integration. So that should be certainly better appreciated and also discussed about more frequently. I think dialogue would help. And very often the wrong reaction to anomalies in the East or elsewhere is if people just refrain from visiting or people refrain from speaking. This is a wrong reaction. I think quite the contrary, more should be invested in dialogue. MEPs, commissioners should visit more frequently. There should be more involvement in civil dialogue or helping to develop the social dialogue. And this would ensure a kind of a better convergence on social and cultural standards.
Well, we are looking at the elections in Hungary and European Parliament elections in 2019. Are you interested? This is a personal question.
Well, I remain interested in European politics, and in reality, I never left, because once you were so heavily involved, you keep receiving the invitation, and from friends in the European Parliament, the Economic and Social Committee, various other organizations, civil society, academia. I'm practically constantly engaged in discussions or contribute through writing to the European policy debates. So I don't consider myself isolated. I'm a very active participant of the European discussions, and in whatever capacity, I expect the continuation of that.
But you don't want to run?
In what exactly?
In the upcoming elections.
The European elections are still very far away. So,
and the Hungarian?
Exactly. First, now we have to focus on the Hungarian election. Myself, on the progressive side, we believe that we have to unite our forces. We have to support our good candidate, Mr. Botka, in this campaign to achieve the best possible result. And once this is done, we can look at the next step.
Tell me more about this, Mr. Botka. How do you create a leader that can actually win? And yeah, Viktor Orban, and just make socialism or social democracy a grand political view in Hungary again.
Well, Mr. Botka, who emerged as the candidate of the Socialist Party at this moment for the elections in Hungary next year, and hopefully, you know, others will also see him as a potential good leader of our country. He is a relatively young politician, but also experienced, because he was very, very young when he entered parliament. He was the youngest member of the Hungarian parliament in 1994. He served several mandates, and he was elected to be the leader of the mayor of Szeged, which is a major town in the south of Hungary, very close to the Serbian border. So he also has the experience to manage the refugee crisis in his neighborhood. So he opened his campaign with a strong focus on social justice. And this is very important, because a lot of people see that wide income inequalities, corruption at government level, are just forms of injustice. This is not fair that, you know, government is allowed to waste the resources of the country and also the EU resources, which are transferred from the European budget to for the development of our country. So there are strong messages. What is still lacking is to form the right alliances, because the Hungarian center and center-left side is very fragmented, too fragmented. It cannot operate this way. So in the next few months, these alliances need to be formed, and then a challenge can be mounted against the rule of Mr. Orbán.
If you were to write the ideology, sort of like the election list of this is what social democracy should be about and should do, that reason to be, what would it include? Let's say like 5 points. What is modern social democracy for you?
Right. Modern social democracy is in many ways the upgrading of traditional social democracy. You have to have decent working conditions in the circumstances of the digital economy. The economy has changed, but the objectives not. You need to endeavor in full employment. I don't think high unemployment is acceptable in any way. You have to tackle inequality. Such levels of income inequality and wealth inequality are unacceptable. They're excessive, unproductive, and they also weaken the economic performance. So this is also pretty important. In Hungary and also in other countries, I think centralization is also a problem, that an elite can centralize power, and there's not enough capacity and power left with the local level. I think local governments and civil society need to be empowered, and this is, you know, part of our agenda too. And finally, the issue of minorities, I believe, is very, very important. Minorities often are not strong enough to represent themselves, and this can result and escalate into major social problems, and that also needs to be tackled through constructive, progressive policies of inclusion.
Well, I'm going to add one to your list, and I think it's very important, and a lot of people, a lot of politicians are forgetting it, are the young people of Europe. They don't see their future on this continent. The youth unemployment is extremely high, especially down south. What do you offer to them?
Well, maybe you didn't notice, but my second point was about full employment. And of course, you cannot have full employment without specific action for helping the young generation. When I was commissioner, we actually designed the European Youth Guarantee Initiative. That was my political product, I would say. And I also follow to some extent the implementation, and I think in many, many countries this is working quite well. Finland was, by the way, one of the model countries to export this best practice. Vice President Katainen also often mentions this when he speaks about this subject, and he also is rightly proud of this Finnish design. But we made it at the European level, and we, I think, with European support, which needs to continue, can ensure that the youth guarantee remains a pillar of the European social model. I don't want to say that for the young people, employment is the only thing that is needed. Quality education, access to quality education is also high on the agenda. The question of housing, depending on the country, can also be a major issue. But employment is at the core. And then you can build the rest around it, for example, by initiatives like the free Interrail for the young people, which I also support.
Well, your governing party, Fidesz, and your Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, has this great idea to force young people who are educated with the taxpayers' money, they want to force them to stay in the country and work for Hungary for X years within, was it 10 or 20 years?
I think 20, yes.
It can be shorter periods, but still.
Indeed, indeed. But because...
Do you agree this is the way to do it?
No, I didn't agree, and luckily, when this was proposed, I think back in 11 or 12, we managed to discuss with the government that they have to reduce the legal power of this expectation. So now this this is more an orientation from the government side. They tried to make it a law, but it was not in conformity with European law and the freedom of movement. And that's why it was not accepted at the end. The Hungarian government also launched a bit late a youth guarantee scheme because there is a European pressure and European support. And without this European element of the policy, what would be on offer for the Hungarian young people is either to go abroad or to go into very inferior, substandard forms of public work, which of course is not quality employment for anybody. So I think, you know, the Hungarian case shows that the European policy can add a lot to the employment practices and the youth policies of a particular country.
Let's jump to year 2019 when we have the next European Parliament elections. That following fall, there will be a new commission. As an ex-commissioner, do you think now, well, this has been debated during the last and the previous elections, that the head of the commissioner should be elected more openly and more democratically? Can that be changed and done by any other way than the leading political group deciding among themselves who the head of the commission will be? What is your suggestion, or how do you feel about this?
Well, I'm sure there can always be improvements in the procedures. But in the last time, it was quite open because there was an open, televised series of debates between the lead candidates of the major political parties of the European Parliament. And the party that won the largest number of seats, the European People's Party, gave its lead candidate, Mr. Juncker, to the European Commission as president. This is practically the same what happens in member states. So,
but should the member states get involved? You know, like national parliaments, should they have a say?
Well, the member states are involved through the heads of state and government, because they actually nominate the members of a commission, and they, as a body, they also have to approve the European Commission as a whole. So the member states are involved in that. The European Parliament is also involved because there are hearings for the commission, the designate commissioners. So, as I said, there can always be improvements. you can ask candidates to go to individual member states and speak with parliaments, for example. This is a possibility, but you know, you cannot make it too complicated if you want the process to be quick enough. And now you already have quite a long period, 6 or 7 months, between the European elections and a new commission entering office, and this should not be too much lengthened, in my view.
Let's have something more interesting to the end of this discussion, Laszlo Andor. I'm Finnish and you Hungarian. Do you actually see there's a connection, like this cousin thing between our two nations, or is it just such a long time ago and language binded?
Well, from the Hungarian side, I can say on behalf of many other friends that, you know, for us, Finland is a very important country, and for many of us, you know, it's a point of reference. Many of us have visited once or several times Finland, and there is surely an awareness about our close relation, which is you know, deemed linguistic without the capacity of recognizing the meaning of the words. But people are aware that our languages are related, and I think there is also a spiritual connection.
What does that include, spiritual connection? I mean, it's like, do we behave alike, or do we have other similarities? What connects us? What do you see?
I think the spiritual connection often comes up when there is some kind of sports competition and your own country is not there. So you have to choose a proxy. And then the proxy can be the nation to which you are related somehow. For us, I think it stops with the Finns, because your country is also a medium-sized, and there are some smaller relatives which might not be so often in the race, or may not be so often talked about as relatives.
What about us people? Are we both moody, happy, eccentric?
Well, maybe Finland could teach something for Hungary, because I think both countries had kind of some alcohol consumption patterns in the past, and particular diseases, coronary heart disease, for example. But if I'm not mistaken, Finland managed to reduce this quite well in recent decades. Hungary is still struggling with many of these issues, and yes, there could be some kind of joint reflection on healthy lifestyle and nutrition.
Thank you, Laszlo Andor, for this discussion.
Kiitos. Thank you very much.